Today is Tuesday, August 7th, and I hereby welcome you to the Tuesday Morning Esports Talk. I am DT and I'm the host of the show. Thank you very much for joining me. Today we will have a slightly shorter episode than you've been used to in the last few weeks because there's not really been that much going on in the last week. We have had IEM Shanghai, which we will definitely talk about in the next few minutes. Afterwards, I will have one or two news items that I will be talking about and I will give my 2 cents about. But that's about it. So we will get into the episode right away. Well, we will be starting to talk about IEM Shanghai, which has concluded 2 days ago. So let's get to it. And as you've been used to when you are regular listener of this podcast, we will go straight into the tournament. We will recap IEM Shanghai, and we will obviously start with the winner of the tournament, which was RNG. They had a very good showing in this tournament. It's really interesting to see how they could even improve throughout the tournament as it progressed, because they actually only lost one map, and they lost it versus Hellraisers in the first best of three, which was the winners match of their group, after they have won against 5power. They did very well there. They won this best of three. After losing the first map, they actually won the best of three. That kind of makes sense when I said they only conceded one map. They played a very nice tournament in general. Cirque had insane performances, especially in the final. He went berserk, especially on Mirage on the last map where they decimated Tai Lu, and they got him to a 16-2 scoreline, where Zerg got 29 kills in, like, yeah, what does it make, 18 rounds? It's insane. 140 ADR, a rating of 2.43. It's just insane. What kind of performance he has been able to provide for his team, especially in the whole tournament. Actually, they did very, very well. It was Zerg, I think, who was the leader in all players in rating. Yeah, I just looked it up. 1.34 rating throughout the whole tournament, which is insane. The whole team did very well. Ethan is right behind there. Fogly is right behind there, and then there's Ben Ted on place on the fourth place in the player stats. Yeah. One more thing, or two more things, actually. One more thing is that RNG has an insanely good showing on Overpass throughout the whole tournament, and so Overpass is maybe a map that teams should ban out against them, which they haven't caught up on, especially after the semi-final performance. Then Tai Lu would have actually been expected to make sure that they won't be able to play Overpass. But if I remember correctly, Tai Lu chose to ban Dust 2. No, they removed Nuke. RNG removed Dust 2. That's what I got mixed up in my head. Which is, of course, a good standard ban for Tai Lu, mostly, I believe. I actually backtracked from my point. RNG is a force to be reckoned with on Overpass. I actually heard someone on the broadcast say that they are a top 4 team in the world on Overpass. Yeah, don't know if I would go that far, but yeah, they are definitely good on Overpass. But maybe there's a little gap between the best teams in the world on Overpass and them. But no, nevertheless, it's a map that is definitely very good for them. It worked out very well. There's nothing much to say on them. And the last point that I actually wanted to make about RNG is that it's very sad, actually, to not see them at the major. Because I've actually talked about this on the podcast as well. And at the Americas Minor, they weren't able to make it. They weren't able to advance through the minor into the final, which would have granted them a spot at the major in London, at the Faceit major. Yeah, they weren't able to do that, and it was actually the only tournament in the last few months that where they weren't able to perform. And Yeah, there's been a lot of discussion about the qualification format for such majors, and a lot of criticism about it. And with an example like RNG, you can actually get it and say, yeah, maybe we should find another way to make this happen, to get the best teams actually in the world at that time to the major, teams that have been definitely deserving of it throughout the whole period between the two majors. So yeah, but this is actually not the topic of this conversation, but yeah, it makes sense when you think about it, and it's a bad thing for RNG now because they've been able to win IEM Shanghai. They have had now great performances before the minor and now after the minor as well, before they are going to the player break, and it's unlucky for them. But yeah, if you're the best team in America, if you want to be the best team in America, and you have been actually one of the best three teams in America, and then you of course see Cloud9, who is now there, who's actually yeah not really the best team in America right now, but Team Liquid is also there already, and you have other teams that are not in this minor process, and then you have a team like Rogue, yeah, for example. And you can't really get past them, and you don't are not able to, yeah, to make sure that you get one of these two spots, which has actually been reserved for you in theory, thinking about it from going into the tournament. Yeah, then it's not like you don't deserve it, because they actually do deserve it, in the whole scheme of things. But if you can't perform there, then yeah, you have to. I'm always a huge fan of getting players and teams to look at themselves first, and then not think about any formats or something like that. From a fan's perspective, or from an outside perspective, a perspective that I don't know that I now can take in. And I think, of course, yeah, it's sad for RNG. It's another good thing that they are not there, because they would deserve to be there. They are in the top 24 teams in the world, so they should be there, but they're not, and it's actually, yeah, their fault that they're not there. So, of course, you could talk about formats, and I've done that, and many people before me have done that, and they will continue to do that. But in the end, it's their fault. They didn't make it. It's a sad thing that they didn't make it. I'm just repeating myself here. But yeah, that's the way it is. Now maybe they can make sure that this doesn't sting as much, because they have now won $125,000. But nevertheless, the next major is there, must be their goal. In between the matches and interviews, you have also heard the players. I think it was Ethan at the time, who said that they get comfortable after every match and after every offline experience, which makes sense. If you're not really used to that, then you have to get these reps under your belly, and you make yeah then you lose the nervousness, and it's with everything in life, right? It's with me doing this podcast, it's with them playing, it's with I don't know, with anything in the world. So makes sense for them, and if they can stick together, which I don't really see why they wouldn't, then they can definitely get even better and better and better. And I think that we will then definitely see them at Katowice, at least at the major, and they will be able to play ECS, of course, and EPL in the next few months. So we will definitely see more of them, and it will be interesting to see how they can cope with that situation. Now, the runner-up of this tournament was actually the team of Tai Lu, so they were the home crowd favorites. They were actually supposed to make sure that we have a China number one winner at this tournament, or this tournament is then actually proves that China's number one. But they weren't able to do that in the final, unfortunately for them, unfortunately, of course, for the crowd. Nevertheless, they have played also a very good tournament. They've been able to beat Virtus Pro in the semifinals, which hasn't been easy, and I would actually talk about that when I will talk about Virtus Pro in the next segment, or in the, yeah, I guess in the next segment, or the next part. Nevertheless, they did really, really well. Even before the semifinals, they were actually the favorite to win the tournament. While looking at the performances of all the teams, because they have played very good Counter-Strike, they've been, of course, been able to ride the wave of the fans. Then when it came to the arena, they've been actually then playing at the venue, the Joy, I don't know, Joy-Con, something like that. I don't really remember the name. But yeah, then they were able to feed off the crowd, obviously. Other than that, me personally now, I'm always excited to watch them play. I'm actually always excited to watch Ben Tett play because I'm a huge fan of his. For the reason that knowing that he's an in-game leader and he puts these guys on his back for, yeah, I don't know how long. He kind of reminds me of Simple. In that regard, of course not in the level, but in his role and obviously, Simple isn't the in-game leader of Na'Vi, but you get the picture, I guess. Yeah, carrying his team more often than not, and making sure that he gets the team as far as possible for himself. Yeah, and like I said, they were able to take Virtus Pro down in two double overtime maps, but nevertheless they were able to do that. In the final, obviously they had a very good CT side on Overpass, which was quite interesting to see. When thinking about RNG, who have been very dominant on Overpass before that, and actually talked about that a few minutes ago. But on their T side, they look completely lost. They weren't able to get a footing on the map. They weren't able to build an economy. They were reset after winning the one round that they have been able to win. So RNG kind of ran through them, especially because they couldn't touch Zerg and they couldn't get the AWP out of his hands, which then of course helped RNG's economy tremendously. And this was actually then the beginning of the end. I don't know what then happened to them afterwards. Then they, because after Overpass it was Mirage and this was their pick, and they have been actually able to, yeah, look good on Mirage. But they weren't then able to replicate that performance versus RNG. And then they lost 16-2, obviously, which kind of is known, I guess. Yeah, and this was, I don't know, I actually talked about that before. Zerg's incredible performance on Mirage, of course, was played a huge role in that. But yeah, losing 16-2 is always tough, especially on your own map pick. But I think they can be proud of themselves. They were able to, like I said, beat Virtus Pro. Go toe to toe with the European teams or the Western teams in that regard. European, of course, versus Pro and Western teams, so North American teams on NRG. Other than that, I don't really have anything much to say about this. Shanghai, of course, so they played at home. It was quite good for them to play there. I think it was a great experience for them, and they can de definitely build upon that. Maybe take a look at their mistakes, make sure what internally didn't work after the CT half on Overpass. Maybe, I guess, yeah, they weren't really able, weren't well equipped enough to beat RNG then on their T half. They only got one round in that time frame. But yeah, the second map, Mirage, then was a complete, yeah, I don't know, screw up. And I don't think that this is actually anything gameplay related. Or, of course, sometimes it is. And when you play against a team that is in a very good form, like RNG was. But yeah, maybe they can analyze these internal things that don't really have anything to do with the gameplay, and they can grow stronger from that. And I hope they can do that. And I think they can do that. They've been able to show that they are improving regularly, so they don't really stand still for a long period of time. And I think that Tidal will come back from that even stronger. And I actually don't know what will be their scheduled next tournament, but Maybe can I look that up? Can I look that up? Ah, they're at the Zotac Cup Masters Grand Finals in just 2.5 weeks' time. So there will be other Western teams, of course. So MIBR will be there, Optic will be there. Virtus Pro is also invited for that tournament. So yeah, another tournament on home soil, so to speak, which is well, because it will be in Hong Kong. And yeah, it's only 2 weeks away, so we will be able to see if they can actually make a difference in that 2 weeks already, or how they will be able to shake that off. Of course, we will also see them at DreamHack Stockholm, and then of course, in the challenger stage of the FACED Major. So a lot of things are going on for them in the next few four, 3 or 4 months, 3 or 4 weeks, of course. Next up, I will be talking about Virtus Pro, and they're, yeah, as I said before, they lost against Tai Lu in the semifinals of the tournament in the best of three, and yeah, I also alluded to that before. It has been in a double overtime in two of the three maps. So on train, that was actually VP's own pick. They went 20 to 22. And on the deciding map, Cage, they went 18 to 22. So twice double overtime. And when you lose a double overtime, or when you lose an overtime on one map, it can be quite frustrating because, yeah, when you lose one map, when you lose a round and you have 10K starting cash, for example, like it was in this tournament, and yeah, you kind of, I don't know, you lose an unlucky round, or you make one small mistake. For example, on train, there was this missed Molotov in, I believe, the, I don't know, 42nd round or 41st round, no, or 40th round. I don't know, but quite late in the second overtime already. There was this missed Molotov by Bialy, when I remember correctly. Yeah, which then kind of screwed up the T bomb defense, post plant defense, defending the bomb, and they kind of screwed it up by missing that Molotov. And like this probably lost them the round. So you lose that round, and you think, oh, that's heartbreaking, because if we had just not missed that Molotov, which is actually in the grand scheme of things quite easy Molotov to hit, then we would have won that round, and then maybe we would have gone into the next overtime and yada yada yada, or even won the round after that as well, blah blah blah. Then you it's quite frustrating. And then when you think about, okay, we go into double overtime, so there's not really that much between us as two teams. And then you do that on two separate maps, in two separate in the same best of three, and you lose both of them, and that makes you lose the series, and you're eliminated from the tournament. That must be massively frustrating, to say the least. Because on Tai Lu's map pick Inferno, they went 16-9. They had a great CT side, and then were able to close it out. And yeah, they weren't able to, I don't know, do the same on either train or cage. So in the end, they lost that series. Like I said, quite frustrating, but it happens. But you can't. What I actually wanted to say is that you can't really say that Tai Lu was now massively better than them. In the end, they were, I think. But that's debatable, I believe. Many many things like that are debatable. But they were the deserving winners. Like I said, I believe. Doesn't have to be the case. Doesn't have to be true. But it was quite close, and I think that this is something that we all can agree on, or most of the people can agree on, and that's actually a good sign for VP, because now it's only Tai Lu in parentheses maybe, but they were able to show that they can play as a team now with the standing morales, and they've actually now in between the series, they have signed Snatchy for the team from from Ago Esports, from the other Polish team, or the second tier Polish team. In theory, of course, they should be the second tier Polish team, but more often than not, they have been better than Virtus Pro in the last few months, I guess. But Snatch is a definitely a good pickup, and although Morales played okay throughout the tournament, I think Snatch is a huge upgrade, of course, and he's an AWPer. So Pasha, although Pasha's played also very well at this tournament, will be able to be, I don't know, maybe a secondary AWPer or mostly rifle, of course. And I think that it's still a good sign for them. But of course, which I actually talked about a few weeks ago, I guess, or maybe even longer than that. Last time Virtus Pro had a good performance. It was also in Shanghai, and I don't know. It seems to be a good place for them because at the CS:GO Asia Championships, they've actually beaten Tai Lu twice in two best of threes, two separate best of threes. Then they lost in the final against Na'Vi, which also has been a tournament where most of the people may have thought that this is the turnaround for VP. This was actually with Snacks still, so there was actually the one of the older iterations of the lineup, of course, after Taz left the lineup, but still, it was with Snacks, if I remember correctly. And everyone was then actually thinking about, is this the VP of the old times? Are they able to turn it around? And then they weren't really able to do that. So I don't know if IM Shanghai is now the perfect timing for them to actually turn it around. But like I also mentioned with Tai Lu, they will be at the Zotac Cup Masters at the Grand Finals. I actually mentioned that a few minutes ago already. And it will be their time to actually manifest their new position, or their not really their new position, but their new trend to go further up the rankings again. Make sure that we will see them more often at places that we are used to seeing them, instead of them losing ESEA, I don't know, MDL matches all the time against not even semi-pros. So maybe this is something that they can build up upon, or build upon for real now. And with Snatchy, of course, they will be able to make it actually. I don't know. I kind of lost my train of thought here, but with Snatchy, they will improve. That's what actually what I wanted to say. When I think they will definitely improve. I think Morales was statistically the worst player of Virtus Pro at this tournament, or at least the second worst player. So with a guy like Snatchy, who's actually had great performances in the last few months as well, who has been the front runner actually, or at the forefront of Argo's success, with Snatchy they will be able to kind of get new blood into the lineup, which has been definitely lacking. Maybe a little bit of more ambition. There have actually been talks about VP now regularly training, I don't know, four or five maps a day, which is not really that much. I actually think I heard it in the broadcast of IM Shanghai, but it's a beginning, and it maybe shows that they are motivated again to actually earn their contracts and earn their money and get into other positions and into positions that the fans actually want them to see and want them to be in. So like I said, 2.5 weeks ago, they have a new chance to prove themselves, and we will have to see and wait and see how they will be able to perform at the tournament. Now some closing thoughts about both Hellraisers and Gambit. Maybe I'll start with Hellraisers. They had to play with a stand-in, of course. Fates was there as a stand-in, who is obviously not the player that Woxic is, but Woxic had health issues, and I think with taking that under consideration, I think they did okay. When you lack a player and when you have to play with a stand-in, it's always a not so ideal situation. So you have to get him back into the with Fates. Some, of course, he has been in the lineup before, so maybe with him it's like getting him back into the groove. But it's also an inconvenience. So it always makes sense if the team doesn't perform as well as they would have with their real lineup, obviously. But nevertheless, in their group they were with NRG and with Virtus Pro, which is unlucky in my opinion, because when you look at Group B and then you look at Gambit, who has been second place in that group, and they actually went there by losing versus Dreamscape in the best of one, then of course beating Greyhound in the best of three and then beating Dreamscape in the best of three again, kind of similar to Virtus Pro in that aspect. But yeah, it's not, I don't know, it's not Virtus Pro and it's not Hellraisers, but it's Dreamscape and it's Greyhound, and Gambit actually lost to them. Yeah, I think that Dreamscape is not the team that Hellraisers is. So maybe one could make the point that Hellraisers would have been also able to beat Gambit in the group in a decider match or whatever the case may be. So they would have been able to advance if they had been in another group. That's, of course, speculation and can't really focus on that. But when talking about Gambit, who came into the semifinal, and when talking about Hellraisers, who went out in the group stage, is only like a small, could be a minor difference in performances, or could even be the case that the team that went out in group stage was actually better performing than the team that went into the semifinals, then it has to be considered, I think. And maybe I'm right about this, maybe I'm wrong about this. No one will ever know, because we can't turn back time, or I don't know, get into the simulation and put some other things in there. But yeah, that's actually everything I wanted to say, because especially when looking at Gambit's performance, of course, versus Dreamscape, they did okay, they did well, they beat them then rather convincingly on in the best of three, in with the 2-0. And especially Adrenaline and Mir were able to put the screws to them, so to say. But other than that, I don't know. I'm not really that convinced by them, because yeah, they should be able to do that regularly. And when losing against Dreamscape in a best of one at the beginning of the tournament, of course you can always lose the best of one. But yeah, maybe you should. I don't know. Maybe you should. If you perform like that, then you must be able to accept the take that someone says, yeah, if Hellraisers would have been in your group, then you wouldn't have made it out. But like I said, no one will ever be able to prove that or actually discuss that in a realistic fashion. And I don't think that Gambit has to accept anything from me, because I'm pretty sure they won't listen to this podcast, or maybe they will, and then they will write me something. But other than that, yeah, I guess that they can be happy with their semi-final performance. They will have to improve rather quickly, or I don't know, maybe take the player break as something in order to, I don't know, improve to make sure that they will be competitive in Stockholm and at the challenger stage, where they will be as well. So yeah, they have a few weeks now, and maybe they will then make me eat my words. But yeah, that's everything we can say up until this point. And they can now take this semi final placement and be happy with it. Of course, they should be, and they hopefully are. And they took home some money, I guess, 22K, $1,000, or $22,000. So good for them. And yeah, we will see them at Stockholm in I guess 3 weeks' time. We will see them, and then we will be able to evaluate their performance there and see if they improved or if they didn't. Now, away from IEM Shanghai, I will be able to talk about some news items. And I will actually only talk about one, now that I've also mentioned that Snatchy is signed by Virtus Pro, which would have been one of the of the news items that I would have talked about if I hadn't talked about it during the Virtus Pro segment. I will actually now talk about the unveiling of the new coach of Made in Brazil, because on whoo, good question. On Wednesday, they came out with an announcement that Janko Paunovic, YNK, the CS:GO analyst at various CS:GO broadcasts and events throughout the whole calendar, is now their new coach, their new head coach. And MMBR hasn't had a head coach, or the lineup would, who has been which has been at SK, of course, before. They haven't had a head coach in over 2 years. The last head coach was Zeus, who is now at Liquid, and who was actually, before the announcement came out, has actually said that he would stay with Liquid and he didn't want to go back to the MIBR core or their lineup. And now they talk to YNK, and of course now he is their head coach. I actually read an interview with Fallen afterwards on HLTV, and he said that their options were Zeus, of course. They thought about that, but he wasn't available. And they then actually thought about Peacemaker, who was a Brazilian, who has been a coach, of course, and has been a 1.6 legend of Brazil. And yeah, they actually then decided to go with YNK. And I think it's a bold move for both parties involved. I don't think it's a bad move, because I'm not really equipped enough to evaluate that. Not that this would actually take me away from taking, I don't know, making my opinions heard anyway, but I don't really think that I could reliably make up my mind about this right now. Not as in the case with Stewie making the move, which I thought at the time was not a good move for him or for them. And yeah, I think I'm. I personally would actually say that I'm still right about this, but the organization and the player himself would disagree with me, and then I would actually have to concede that point, of course, and I'm fully aware of that. Now, getting back to the coach talk, for MIBR, it's interesting because, yeah, there's not really a valid reason for him to make that move, or for them to sign him, because other than the fact that he's really good, which then should be the case, of course, if they sign him without any other reason. Now, diluting the brand and Made in Brazil, but I think that this has been stated before, that when Stewie and Tarek, especially when Tarek then joined, there's not really that much emphasis on making the organization fully Brazilian, and I don't think it really needs to be the case. Because you have the core of Fallen, of course, Zeron of Fur, and as long as these guys are there, or yeah, a similar core is there, I don't think that the Brazilians or the Brazilian fans would actually mind that much. Of course, some will, and that always will be the case. And I think that even some people from outside of Brazil would actually look at them in a similar, in a certain way that would diminish their character in their eyes. But yeah, you will always have these types of guys around in the community and in fan bases around the world. So I think that they made this choice because they think he's a good coach, which of course should be the main requirement of signing a coach. And yeah, so someone who hasn't really had that much coaching experience is always a risk when you sign him for a job that is that important, because there's a lot of pressure in that, and it's something that we also know from traditional sports. And I think this comparison is quite valid in this case, because you can always sign a fresh guy that's now recently a head coach, or who now hasn't been a head coach before at all, and then he gets the position at, yeah, a major team in, I don't know, maybe talking about football, I don't know, there's
in Germany we have Julian Nagelsmann, who has been a coach at Hoffenheim within being 28 years of age, not really having that much performance in the youth coaching system. Of course, some, but not really that major coaching experience, and especially not on the big stages. And they implemented him at Hoffenheim, and yeah, it worked out for them. So, but there's this risk of not working out, of course, right? And when you don't really have that much experience, especially with older guys in that case, players that are older than the coach himself and have more experience in the world of football, and maybe think that they have accomplished more or definitely have accomplished more, and then therefore not really respecting the guy. I don't know. These are always difficulties when thinking about giving the position to a guy like that. And I don't really think that they will be disrespectful of YNK, but maybe they will have some problems with that as well. And now for YNK himself, he had a great position in at the analyst desks around the world. Like I already mentioned before, he has been at most of the events as an analyst, and he's beloved by the community, which you could actually see by the reactions that many of the people had in comments, or I don't know, at Reddit, or on other sites or on Twitter, where you can actually see that the guys, the community has actually liked him very much as an analyst. And now giving that up to go into a position, being a head coach, I don't know, lose or I don't know, leaving the secure place at an analyst desk and going to the head coach position, which is much more volatile, this is something that we also know from traditional sports. If you don't really get good results, then your position is the most vulnerable in the whole team. Maybe this is something that is not really that prevalent in esports, because we are actually quite ready to get rid of players if we don't think that they perform that well. But we wouldn't get rid of whole teams just to keep the coach. So this is something that, of course, is even less so in traditional sports, but also in esports, that's not really something that happens too often. And therefore it's also risk for him. But I commend the move from his aspect, of course, and I really like that he seeks that challenge. I think, of course, there may be other incentives for him, which I'm not really sure about. That could be the case, could not be the case, but I think this adrenaline of getting a team to these stages and being competitive again is something that's invaluable for some people, and I think Wanker is a character like that, and I can only commend him for it. I really like the decision, and I actually enjoy the decision from MIBR's part as well. Also, although I kind of criticized it or only talked about things that could be a critique of the whole thing, but giving him a chance is great. Him taking the chance is great, and I really look forward to what these two entities now can come up with together in order to improve MIBR, which definitely is needed in my opinion. They can't be performing the way that they did in the last few months, and will be interesting to see how they will develop as a unit, because it's not only about the team, it's not only about the coach, it's about the unit of coach and team, and maybe seeing influences of YNK when you maybe if you take the time to compare the things that he said on an analyst desk. And he also often broke down rounds, which has been incredibly interesting in my opinion, most of the time when he did it, because you can really see it from a different perspective that you maybe wouldn't have thought of yourself, especially not when you're looking at it live. This has been a long rant now to basically say I really like it and I really like the move, and I'm looking forward to what these two, the team and the coach, can do in the future. Zotac Cup Masters in Hong Kong is, of course, around the corner. I've actually mentioned the tournament two or three times now, and this is then the next stop for MRBR as well, and we will be able to see how they will, if there's actually been a change, a measurable change from looking at them before and after. And I will definitely be watching and looking at how the team has developed in these 2 or 3 weeks now. And with that, we arrived at the end of this week's episode. I didn't actually think I would talk about the stuff that I have been talking about now for 40 minutes straight, but yeah, it's still quite not an hour, so I didn't completely lie in the introduction. Nevertheless, you know the drill by now. If you have any questions, suggestions, or other remarks, please let me know on social media. As always, all the important links are in the show notes of this episode. If you want to voice your opinion about this podcast, I would really appreciate a rating on iTunes or wherever you're listening to this right now. Any kind of feedback is highly appreciated. Finally, thank you very much for listening, and I will catch you guys in 2 weeks, actually. I would skip next week's episode because the players deserve a player break, and I guess I deserve a break as well. Just kidding. I'm on vacation starting from two no, tomorrow actually, when you're listening to this, and I won't be back for I won't be back in time to record another episode next week. I'm not really concerned about that because I think that there will not be a lot happening in that time frame, and I'm pretty sure that now that I've said that, there will be. So yeah. I would be interested. You can be interested together with me. What I will be talking about in 2 weeks, because yeah, there won't be any tournaments going on. But yeah, what would be CS:GO scene without some controversy to keep us connected to the scene in the meantime? So, like I said, I will be back in 2 weeks. I will skip one episode next week, just so you know. And then, yeah, I will catch you guys in 2 weeks when I'm back. See ya!